Merry Christmas, Place to Be Nation. Scott Criscolo here with the NWA Saturday Special. The Doctor and I are going to take the next 2 weeks off to enjoy the holidays with our family and friends, but don't fret. You will not be losing the NWA Saturday Special for the next 2 weeks, because today, the day after Christmas, we're going to have a special classic episode of the show from earlier this year, and then next Saturday, the day after New Year's, we will have a special classic episode for you, and the Doctor and I will be back with a brand new episode of the NWA Saturday Special on Saturday morning, January 9th. But enjoy this classic episode from back in the spring when we talked about the highs and lows of Sweet Charlotte, the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship. We also took the time to honor, because right before the episode aired, we lost one of our favorite, if not our favorite, ring announcer of all time, the great Howard Finkel, who passed away earlier this year. So Merry Christmas, and enjoy the classic episode of the NWA Saturday Special here on the Place to Be Wrestling Network.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back, everyone, to the newest episode of the NWA Saturday Special. I am your co-host, Scott Criscolo. We are here on the Place to Be Wrestling Network and PlaceToBeNation.com. It's another Saturday morning if you're listening to this as it drops, or any other day of the week, because the other days are good, too. Although the way life is now, it's just one long day. Let me bring in my co-host, who I don't think he remembers what day it is either, the Doctor, Dr. G, George Rubino. It's like saying 11-teen.
What day is it? I don't even know anymore.
It's Wooders Day.
Today, this day, other day.
It's today, yes. Today is that's funny that we just quoted a Billy Corgan band's song, Today. Today is the greatest day I've ever known. Anyway, so Doctor, always a pleasure. Tonight we have tonight's a topical show. Probably be a little shorter than our normal shows. But we are going to delve into something tonight. A resurgence, if you will. But before we do that, I would be remiss as a wrestling fan, particularly one who grew up in the Northeast
and lived and died with the World Wrestling Entertainment / Federation since 1983. If you and I did not talk about the sad loss that the wrestling world suffered this past week, on Thursday, we lost arguably, I would say undisputedly, the greatest ring announcer in wrestling history, and that is, of course, the Fink, Howard Finkel, who passed away on Thursday at the age of 69. I mean, as I've been watching different promotions and different things on the network, of course, you know, you talk about like the original WWF announcer, Jim McHugh. He was the precursor of Howard Finkel. And you guys like Mark Lawrence in World Class and Reaser Bowden in Mid-South and that guy, what the hell's his name? The guy in Crockett, you know, the guy with the glasses. There's a Starrcade 85, that guy. Remember him?
Nah, I don't remember his name, though.
I know. I wish we had Chad here. Chad Campbell would know. Anyway, there's been great ring announcers around the world, but the Fink is the man. I think
the Finks, there's nobody better.
I'll
fight people on that one.
Yeah. And I don't think you'll get much argument. I've always had a soft spot for the Fink because he is a former usher at the New Haven Coliseum before he went to the Worldwide Wrestling Federation. He debuted at Madison, his first ever ring announcing gig at Madison Square Garden. I posted it on Twitter. Was in January, I think, or was it July? It was January of 1976 was the first time that he ring announced at Madison Square Garden, of course. If you go over...
I thought it was 77, but you could be...
No, right. It was 76. Richard Land, our good friend Landy from the history WWE.com posted it. It was January of 70. It was either January of... I don't remember. The month started with a J. I'll have to look it up. It was either January of 76 or July of 76. And he actually announced a match between the Brun. No, it had to be 76 because Bruno was champion. So it was Bruno was defending the world title against Ken Patera. That was the match. To me, the Fink will always be the voice of TV. He's the voice of Madison Square Garden. That there's no doubt. You know, Bob Shepard was the voice of Yankee Stadium. Howard Finkel is the voice of Madison Square Garden. I'll fight anybody on that. In fact, the Dolans, the fucking piece of shit scumbags that they are, not only should there be a banner now, there's a banner hanging there for Bruno. I think there should be a banner hanging, a small one, but a banner hanging for Howard Finkel. That's my opinion. There should be a banner for the Fink. It should just say the Fink. And I don't think it needs to be marked. I think it should just say the Fink. It shouldn't say his full name. It should just say the Fink. And you know what? If you've been going to that building for your whole life for anything, Knicks, Rangers, whatever, and you look up and you ask, who's the Fink? You just haven't been to the Garden enough, pal. Pal! What are your favorite memories of the Fink, Dr. G?
My favorite thing is when he would announce a new champion and new.
My favorite always, and I was like needling Sean Kidd on it. My favorite is, of course, when he crowned Ricky Steamboat as the new Intercontinental Champion at WrestleMania 3. That one I always remember too. And of course, when Hogan won the title from the Sheik in January of 84.
So he debuted as ring announcer at Madison Square Garden on January 17th, 1977.
Okay. Seven? I thought it was 76. Oh, maybe it was different. Oh, I'll have to talk to my man Landy about that. I could have sworn it was 76.
That's per Wikipedia. Now, that could be wrong, so.
I don't know. As far as he had it on his site, on their site, that it was January of 76. But who knows? In any event, he was there for quite a long time. He was the voice of our pay-per-views. I know a lot of people remember him from when he would say the Royal Rumble match, and he would read the whole how the Rumble worked, and now who has drawn number one, and it'd be the person that came out number one. Those in the Attitude Era remember him for things like being Chris Jericho's little lackey in '99, and you know, but his last, the thing I most remember for him was his last, time at the Garden was when he ring announced for CM Punk at the 2011 Survivor Series when he took on Alberto Del Rio for the world title, because that was the whole, you know, when what's his name, Roberto Alberto, or whatever his name was, Roberto Rodriguez, or whatever the heck his name was, his little ring announcer pal there. And Punk decided he wanted his own ring announcer, and it would be the Fink.
Yep.
And Fink was very emotional because he hadn't been in the Garden in ages, and he ring announced.
I'm seeing 1977 everywhere, so just so you know.
Well, you know what?
But I'm
gonna look at.
Whatever it is, it was back in the 70s, and you know the one thing is just he just made everything feel big, you know, and you know when everybody forgets he came up with the name WrestleMania.
Yes, he did.
So I mean that's pretty big. I mean, this is a man who worked in the office and he knows. Nobody could, you know, but he would do, what was he at one of the conventions that we went to, and nobody could stump him on, stump the thing. He was amazing. And I know he loved his Mets too.
He did. And he was a big Jet fan too. He was a Jets fan too.
Ah, poor guy. Man, didn't he suffer enough?
Oof. Oh, no, you're right. I don't know what, all right. So YouTube had it wrong then. Cause, Landy has it right. It says here, Howard Finkel's MSG debut as ring announcer. January 17th, 1977. All right, so YouTube had it wrong then. It was a YouTube clip. That's what it was. YouTube had it wrong. They had 1976.
But the Fink was just made everything seem so big. It just, you know, it was special. And I really missed him in recent years. Before he got sick, I just felt like he could have been used more. I know he didn't have the look that they were looking for, but and no offense to Lillian Garcia and Justin Roberts and all Tony the other Chimmel. Guys, Tony Chimmel. There's just they're good, but they're not in Howard Finkel's league. That was just something. Oh, I just love the way he.
Yeah, I was very, and I said it to the guys in our chats, it's Thursday when it happened. I said, you know what? As much as I've loved WrestleMania my whole life, and even now, when Fink stopped ring announcing WrestleMania, it was never the same. And I know starting in like 04, I think for WrestleMania 20, he would do the Hall of Fame the Hall of Fame class, even if the other ring announcers were doing the regular
just
stuff.
Get,
he would
just
do the
Hall of chills, Fame. You know, like. You know, me being a Yankee fan, it kind of reminds me how Bob Shepard, you know, that sound where it just sounds so classy and so, you know, sounded big and sounded special. And that's just how I feel about Howard Finkel. And he will be missed. And, he's WWE's longest tenured employee.
He was. Yes, he was.
It's a shame because with all the stuff going on, he's not really going to get the send off that he deserves. But he will always be remembered, and you know he'll be able to. You know that's what's great about today with all the technology. And the WWE Network is his voice will always be there. We'll always be able to remember him.
Yeah, he said it. He was in the center of the ring on March 31st, 1985, when he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to WrestleMania." And with that, a legacy was born. Rest in peace, Fink. You were the voice of a lot of our childhoods. And you know what sucks, Dr. G? And I was a little emotional the other day when I was at work, and I said to myself, you know what? All of the great voices of the 80s are gone. I think Jesse's the only one left. We don't have Gorilla. We don't have Bobby. We don't have Fink. We don't have Mean Gene. Like, the voices of our childhood are slowly fading, and it's sad. It really is. All that's left in terms of the voices, the only one left now is Jesse, and he's lost his fucking mind. So anyway, rest in peace, Fink. You will always be missed. I'm sure coming up on the next episode of the Place to Be podcast, I'm sure my PIC, Mr. Rosero, and I will talk a little bit about it as well. We will have Pete Winston on because we'll be doing a Saturday Night's Main Event, of which Fink will probably be on. So we'll talk a little bit about Fink there as well. But hey, look, if you have your own Fink memories, post it on my Twitter at PTB Podfather, Dr. G's at K of C 14360, and on the Place to Be Nation Facebook page. Place to Be Nation's main event Facebook page. What are your memories of the Fink? What are your favorite moments of the Fink and your favorite announcing moments? Was it the "and new" or when he announced the Rumble?
I love when he said "and new World Wrestling Federation heavyweight champion Stone Cold."
What was the other Fink thing? Shit. Oh, you know what was also great, and I've noticed it now, and you remember this, as JR and I have been doing the MSG house shows, the anticipation that Fink would do when he would read off the next month's card, and he would like build your anticipation. What's the main event going to be? Is it going to be, is Hogan in town? Are we going to have a world title match? Are we going to have a cage? Like Fink would read the card. He'd be like, "It happened earlier tonight, and it'll be on sale at your Ticketmaster or Ticketron outlets this coming February 9th. We will have the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. He'll take on, in a return match, Macho Man Randy Savage." And the place would go fucking nuts. Like, he would do that pause. Like, he'd build the anticipation of what the main event was going to be. If there was a world title on the line, were we going to get a cage, blood, hardcore, or whatever. No, hardcore match was not the chic term in, 1987, 88. Falls Count Anywhere, whatever the hell it was.
No Holds Barred.
That was the other. Well, that was the movie. Anyway.
No, but that was the other term they used.
Right. Anyway, rest in peace, Fink. You will be sorely missed by all of us because, again, another voice of our childhood that is no longer with us. Anyway, all right. That was our little dive into the WWF. Let's get back to the business at hand. Tonight on our program, or this week, we're going to talk about, because obviously all six, all six of the six pack of territories, that's what I call it. I say there are six consistently good territories or companies in pro wrestling right now. WWE, AEW, Ring of Honor, New Japan Pro Wrestling, Impact Wrestling, and the NWA. And if you compare the champions, I would definitely argue, and I know you would as well, that Nick Aldis needs to be in the equation as right now one of the best champions, if not the best champion of all the promotions right now. He has carried himself so well as the NWA World's Heavyweight Champion. Agree?
I agree. He makes that belt probably seem bigger than it really is at this point, because obviously not as big as the two big companies, which is AEW and WWE. So, but he makes that belt mean something, and he treats it like how we felt when Ric Flair had it or Harley Race, in our childhood. I can't say I remember Terry Funk and Dory Funk and
Jack Briscoe.
I don't really remember those days, but obviously in our era watching, even when we were younger, watching Harley Race and Ric Flair carry that belt, for long periods of time. Obviously Dusty won it. She's had, like, you had other guys who had it for small cups of coffees, but the guys who really carried that belt year in and year out, Nick Aldis is up there with those guys. In terms of making the belt feel special, I'm not comparing Nick Aldis to Ric Flair in terms of Harley Race, but he's a special talent that knows how to make that belt feel like the number one belt in professional wrestling.
Yeah. Yep, he is. He's not letting himself be intimidated. Or feel discounted compared to Braun Strowman or Drew McIntyre, Tessa Blanchard, Roosh in ROH, and Naito in New Japan, and of course John Moxley in AEW. But tonight on our show, we're going to chat about the ups and downs of Sweet Charlotte. Like, what is the path, particularly in the last 25 years, that the NWA World Heavyweight Championship is taken from the bowels of, you know, from the greatness of Lou Fez, and we'll talk about the 70s and Flair and stuff. The stuff that we all know, but really the last 25 years, ever since Dennis Corleone almost crapped his pants when Shane Douglas chucked it to the ground, and what happened after that, and how William Corgan and Dave Lagana and the new NWA and Nick Aldis have tried to have done a wonderful job of elevating this title back to as best it can be on a stage now. And still the best looking belt. I have to
know that.
Although I do like the IWGP heavyweight title. I think that's a nice belt too. Anyway, obviously we can go back to the beginning. We're not going to go too, you know, we're not going to go through everything, but we talk about Hackenschmidt and Gotch, but technically the inaugural NWA World Heavyweight Champion was Orville Brown, because that is when the National Wrestling Alliance was formed in 1948. So from 1948 to 85, let's say to the mid-80s, the World's Heavyweight Champion was based on what promotion in the NWA pretty much was calling the shots. And for a long time, of course, it was Sam Mushnick, the promoter in the Midwest in St. Louis. So, of course, who had the world title more than anybody? Lou Thesz. Now, Lou Thesz had the world title for – he only had it three times. But adding that up, he held it for, Jesus, 7,000 days or some fucking nonsense. Let's see. He won it – let's see. I believe you won it in 1949. Let's see. Lou Thesz won the title. Well, actually, it was handed to him. Here's what it was. Orville Brown was recognized. Technically, he defeated Sonny Myers, and his reign started on July 14th, 1948, at a live event in Des Moines, Iowa. He held the belt for 501 days, and then Lou Thesz would be handed the belt when Orville Brown suffered career-ending injuries in an automobile accident. Thesz had earlier won the NWA's World Heavyweight Championship, the NWA, the World Wrestling Association's. Then they became the undisputed title. The belts went together, and his first title reign was recognized on November 27th, 1949. He'd hold the belt for 1,941 days, or recognized 2,300, before losing to Leo Nomalini, the former 49er player, in March of 55. We'd have Whipper Billy Watson, Edouard Carpentier, Dick Hutton, Pat O'Connor, but Lou Thesz would hold the belt a couple more times throughout the 50s. Then a guy came along that changed everything. Nature Boy. No, not that Nature Boy. Nature Boy, Buddy Rogers, who won the title in June of 1961 from Pat O'Connor. And technically, ready for this? Killer Kowalski was world champion for 425 days. He defeated Buddy Rogers on November 21st, 1961. Bruno held the belt for a day, Bruno Sammartino, but refused to accept the title because Rogers had wrestled with an injury. The NWA considers Rogers' reign to last until Lou Thesz. So, Bobo Brazil held it for 73 days, but he refused the title. Buddy Rogers won it back, and then it was a whole back-and-forth thing for a while. And then, as you mentioned, Gene Kaniski won it, and then you mentioned some guys in the 70s, Dory Funk Jr., Harley Race. Harley Race's first reign started on May 24th, 1973, when he defeated Dory Funk Jr., he wouldn't hold the belt again for 4 years. He lose to Jack Briscoe. Then Giant Baba would beat him, and then Jack Briscoe won it back. Then he would lose to Terry Funk in Miami Beach, Florida. So he held the belt for 424 days until Harley Race won it back from him in February of 77 in Toronto. And then the final – well, not the final, but – well, I guess final. On August 21st, 1979, in Tampa, Florida. The son of a plumber from Austin, Texas. Yeah! American Dream Dusty Rhodes won his first world championship from Harley Race. Harley Race God rest his soul. Another one we lost very, very recently. What would you say about him, Dr. G? Would you say that he was the, like, obviously the NWA world title didn't bounce around a lot like, you know, fucking the world title, the WWF title did in, during the Attitude Era when, you know, guys would win the belt for like 3 weeks. There's something about the stability that made that world title special more than anything else. The fact that you didn't see a lot of changes, even as frustrating maybe as it was to go to a live event and expect a title change and not get it. The fact that titles were held for a long time. Again, let me just give you some examples quickly. You know, besides Fez's 2,000 days or whatever, Harley's first reign was 57 days. He didn't hold it that long. Jack Briscoe's was 500. Then Funk held it for 424. Harley held it for 926. Do you think stability more than anything else is what kept that world title at the level it was?
Yes. And, it, you know, again, the NWA world heavyweight champion, as we call it, was defended around the world. You know, they went to every, you know, whereas the WWWF world championship was really mostly just defended in the Northeast.
Right.
So, and the AWA pretty much stayed in their territory, which was in the Midwest and in Canada. But the NWA world champion, you know, also traveled over to Japan and traveled over overseas to Puerto Rico and to all different countries around the world, as well as all over the country. And, you know, matter of fact, the NWA world heavyweight champion actually would go into WWF occasionally. Occasionally you'd see, you know, title versus title match back in the 70s. So that belt was always known as the number one belt in professional wrestling. Obviously, when Vince Jr. took over and, you know, started putting the territories out, the World Wrestling Federation heavyweight championship became more prestigious. But up until that point, this belt, I mean, and like I said, when Race held it and Flair and Briscoe, these guys were guys that could go 60 minutes every single night. And they would go into the territories and make the territory's number one guy, you know, look great. Even if they didn't win the belt, they made them look great to keep their territories running.
Right.
And it was a very big commitment. You know, I know that I know Terry Funk said that he, you know, after a while he had enough of all the traveling, you know, like, these guys, it takes a lot. You know, Flair, you know, look at how many marriages he had and wasn't around for his kids. You know, we saw it in the ESPN 30 for 30. You know, he definitely, you know, Flair definitely, not Flair, but I mean, the belt, I apologize. I got myself all, I'm so into this. It's like got myself distracted, but the belt just always meant something because those guys had to go around the world, defend the belt in all those territories, and they had to give up a lot to hold that belt. And not everybody wanted to be champion, even though you think, oh my God, everybody wants to be world heavyweight champion. They knew the commitment that had to go into it. Now you're going to make a lot of money, but you're not going to have a lot of personal time. And
I know, you know, it wore Jack Briscoe out. If you watch the and I have it on DVD, and it's also on the WWE Network, the history of the World Heavyweight Championship, because that's of course when WWE kind of enveloped it in 2002, their World Heavyweight Championship, which was kind of the same lineage of WCW. They kind of created their own lineage. Jack Briscoe said that there were some days I don't know what city I was in. I wanted to make sure I was on the right plane.
Now Terry Funk, I know, struggled with it for a little while. He had it for 424 days. So he, you know, they enjoyed being champion, but, you know, it took a lot out of their personal.
Earned your money. Let's put it that way. You earned your money. Nobody could say that you slacked off as champion. So the 70s was like a big heyday for the NWA. and for the World's Heavyweight Championship because it was held by some legendary guys, and these guys were $2 stakes. We ain't talking, you know, plunges and topes and all that kind of stuff. It was an elbow to your fucking eyeball, you know?
True.
You were in the ring with Harley Race. You felt it. You knew by the end of the night you were in there with him. There was no doubt about that. Then we get into the 80s, and you know, there'd be some interesting back and forth. Some obviously, Tommy Rich had his cup of coffee in April of 81, held it for four fucking days. Harley won it back. Then Dusty won it back in June of 81 in Atlanta. And then,
you know, Flair did have some times where he would lose the belt, but they don't really recognize
well,
it.
Well, yeah, well, I'm about to get to that because there's a few bounce arounds in the early part of the decade. On September 17th, 1981, in St. Louis, in Kansas City, Kansas, the man, and every time I do a written piece, I always type World Heavyweight Champion in capital letters because by this point he owns them. Nature Boy Ric Flair won his first world title. Then he lost to the Midnight Rider. Oh, there we go. On February 9th, you should remember this. On February 9th, 1982 in Miami, the Midnight Rider, Dusty Rhodes, under a mask due to being under suspension in Florida, defeated Flair for the title, but he returned it when NWA President Bob Geigel asked Rider to unmask and return the belt, as NWA rules then forbade masked wrestlers from being world champion. That's fucking stupid as that. And then you got your little soda kicked out, knocked out of your hand. So.
That was Kevin Sullivan, by the way.
Then Jack Veneno won it. Flair won it back. And then Carlos Colon. And then Flair won it back. And then Victor Hovica. And then Flair won it back. I mean, he went all through most of 82 into early 83. He was in Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, Trinidad, like all these weird fucking places.
But for the most part, that's what we're talking about. The belt was really prestigious because this belt was defended all around the world. You know, in Trinidad, I mean, when was the last time you've heard a championship being defended in Trinidad?
Yeah. But technically, here in the States, Flair held the belt from September of 81 until Harley beat him at a house show in St. Louis in June of 83. And then we had the match that show the rest of the country what was going on down in the Mid-Atlantic area. And that is, of course, Starrcade 1983, a Flair for the gold. And, of course, the World's Heavyweight title match inside the steel cage, which maybe is on some people's GWCW ballots, Dr. G. Ric Flair and Harley Race. Gene Kaniski, who was terrible as the ref, but, hey, you know, what are you going to do? And Flair went back, and then that was the moment when Flair really, you know, put his stamp on the legacy of the title. So he'd hold it, you know, he'd lose it to him and Harley would go back and forth with it in New Zealand. They're not recognized. Some guys that probably could have been champion that never had a chance. One of them, sadly, was David Von Erich, who of course passed away, but there were rumors he was going to be world champion.
Yes.
And instead, at the Von Erich Memorial Parade of Champions on May 6th, 1984, Kerry Von Erich became champion. He held the belt for a whopping 18 days because he was coked up and pilled up beyond recognition and not reliable, so Flair won it back in Yokosuka, Japan. Flair would hold it for quite a while, 793 days. Dusty beat him at the Bash in 86. Flair won it back 14 days later. And then, of course, guys like Ronnie Garvin. And we get into 1989 and, of course, the epic trilogy with Ricky Steamboat. And then Sting, as we get into the 90s, Sting would win his first world's title at the 1990 Great American Bash. Now, we're heading into a different era now. Crockett. By 1984, Crockett pretty much was like the sole proprietor of the world of the NWA world title. There was not as much traveling after 1984. It was pretty much strictly Crockett's belt. Like the Mid-Atlantic heavyweight title kind of faded by the early, like late 85, early 86. Then the NWA became WCW, and that was in late 87 into 88. Then there was the split. We would have the controversy involving Tatsumi Fujinami and Flair at Starrcade in the Tokyo Dome in March of 91.
Tatsumi Fujinami. Damn Tokyo Dome, always causing problems.
Oh, it is always causing problems. I know, right? Briefly defended along with the IWGP heavyweight title. The title change is originally ignored in the U.S., but is retroactively recognized by WWE. Ric Flair won it at the first Super Brawl in May of 91. And then, now the split happens. When Flair would leave the WCW, would leave Crockett, I guess, WCW, in the summer of 91, and of course he would go to the World Wrestling Federation. He was stripped of the NWA title, and now the NWA is kind of on its own because WCW would create their own belt. It would eventually be won by Vader and then Ron Simmons, and then that would be the WCW lineage. The NWA then was kind of in a weird spot in the early 90s. They were kind of on their own for the first time, and unlike back in the day, Dr. G, it was not that prestigious. The World Wrestling Federation title was prestigious, maybe had eclipsed it, as well as the WCW title because of the
prestige. But think about it, what really was the NWA? I mean, most of the territories were gone. They really weren't any. I mean, they had a board of directors, but what were they once WCW?
Yeah,
moved on. Now we know that they called it what they called the international title for a little
yes.
bit. I think.
Yep. Well, Masachono on day five of the G1 Climax defeated Rick Rude in the finals of a tournament, and then Chono and Muda won it. In January 93, Chono Muda, makes me sweat. Barry Windham would win it at Super Brawl 3. Then Ric Flair won it back at Beach Blast. Then it was vacated in September. What happened was, here's where the real split happened. In September of 93, WCW withdrew from the NWA, but the NWA continued to recognize Flair as champion and tried to reach a deal with WCW for the title to be dropped to a wrestler of NWA's choosing before the end of the year. On September 15th, communications broke down and the NWA attempted to obtain a temporary restraining order against WCW to stop them from advertising the scheduled Rick Rude versus Ric Flair match at Fall Brawl as a world title match and have the belt returned to them. Though WCW managed to keep the belt, they dropped any mentions of the NWA name from that point forward, and the title was vacated by the NWA while WCW continued to recognize Flair as the WCW International Heavyweight Champion. What a fucking mess, huh?
Yeah, I remember all this.
So, then, with the big gold belt now back in the NWA WCW camp, for the first time since 1986, 10 pounds of gold returned, and there was a tournament in the summer of 1994 to determine a brand new undisputed NWA World's Heavyweight Champion. In that tournament, let's see. Here were the wrestlers. Your wrestlers were Too Cold Scorpio, Chris Benoit, 911, Doink the Clown, Dean Malenko, Osamu Nishimura, Shane Douglas, and the Tasmaniac. So, of course, you're wondering, oh, wow, they all kind of seem familiar. Well, it was a live supercard held by Eastern NWA Eastern Championship Wrestling. Yes. And it was to determine an undisputed NWA World's Heavyweight Champion. Well, Shane Douglas defeated Too Cold Scorpio in the final. And he had both. And at the time, he was the NWA Eastern Championship Wrestling Heavyweight Champion. And Shane Douglas would then cut a great promo and cuts one of the most infamous promos in wrestling history, where he says he rattled off the names of guys that were former champions, and they could all kiss my ass. And he threw the belt on the ground. And he decided he was going to be the new ECW heavyweight champion. The next day, Eastern Championship Wrestling broke off from the National Wrestling Alliance and, of course, became Extreme Championship Wrestling and the ECW that we all know and love.
Dennis Carluzzo.
Carluzzo fucking crap his pants.
Yeah, pretty much. did not know what to do.
No, it was a stain. What were you thinking about the NWA at this point? I mean, obviously we were big WWF fans. We were watching WCW, but this is where the downs came. Like from this point in the mid 90s, you know, the NWA is practically an afterthought.
Going back to, you know, those days, remember, we didn't, I mean, I know that Meltzer had his dirt sheet and all that, and which I didn't read at that time, but you know, back in the mid early 90s, we don't have as much knowledge of stuff as we had today. You know, to us, we thought WCW was NWA. Let's be honest. We weren't even thinking about the original NWA anymore. We just thought that NWA became WCW, and, you know, probably didn't care about it as much as we care about it now. So I think, you know, then when you would start hearing about some of this stuff, but again, we weren't as in tune. You know, a lot of times you had to either read the magazines or the dirt sheets to really know what was going on with a lot of this stuff. So do I remember this tournament back in 1994 for the new champion after the mess with ECW? No, I don't even remember it, to be honest.
Nope. By this point, I think the mainstream audience was watching either WWF, WCW, or ECW. So they would have another tournament. And on November 19th, Chris Candido defeated Tracy Smothers. And now we're getting to the point for the next few years where, let's just say we're not going to fire off names like Harley Race and Ric Flair.
No.
Here were your champions between 1994 and 2002. Ready? Chris Candido, Dan Severn, who held the belt, by the way, for 1,479 days. But the truth was, who gave a shit?
It's true.
He wore it when he wore it when he came to the WWF, and people were like, oh, okay, whatever. By then, by 98, of course, remember Cornette had that NWA storyline in 98 in WWF, which was not very good.
No.
Naoya Ogawa, Gary Steele. I wonder if he has a brother named Scott. And then Ogawa won it back. Then it was vacated. Then there was another tournament run by Mike Rapata. In September of 2000, he beat Jerry Flynn. Sabu won the world title, won the belt in November of 2000. Mike Rapata won it back.
I have to be honest with you, I did not know that.
I didn't either.
I did not know Sabu was NWA.
Place to be Nation alumnus Steve Corino won the world title in October of 2001. Then Shinya Hashimoto won it in December. Then Dan Severn won it back in March of 02. And then the NWA got a bit of a renaissance for the next 5 years because the world title would be enveloped into a new promotion started by Jeff Jarrett. And you know where I'm talking about right now. May of 2002,
TNA.
NWA/TNA. Was born. So the NWA world title at this point got a little bit of a boost back in the national spotlight because after the fall of WCW and ECW in 2001, WWF in 2002 was beginning its ruthless aggression era. The NWA now actually, the NWA world title was actually now in a viable promotion, or at least apparently viable. And listen, if you want to check out the first 18 or 20 weekly pay-per-view episode recaps, go to Place to Be Nation's main event. Check out our archive, and you can see all of the you can listen to all of the NWA TNA Classic pay-per-view recaps up to December of 02. And of course, keep listening because we'll continue to do it. So of course, the inaugural belt was won by Ken Shamrock, who won the tournament. Ron Killings then won it.
Ron Jarrett.
Ron the Truth Killings now. He's our truth, and he's the 24/7 champion. And then, you know, Jarrett won it, AJ Styles, very early on in his career. Jarrett, Ron Killings won it back. Then Ray Gonzalez won it. What the hell's Ray Gonzalez? He won it at Juicio Final 2005. Whatever the fuck that is. Jeff Jarrett won it back the next night. Titles returned to Jarrett. AJ, Raven, Jarrett won it again. Rhino. So obviously, as we got to 05, 06, it was still the big title. But on...
I did not know Rhino won the belt. I'm telling you, some of the stuff I did not know.
Yeah, well, this, you know, this is Christian Cage. Of course, it was Christian in WWF. Sting won it back. He won it in 06. And then on May 13th, 2007, Christian Cage was your world champion. The NWA and TNA ended their business agreement. The NWA went back to being its own thing. And, of course, Christian Cage was the first ever TNA World Heavyweight Champion. So for that five-year stretch, the NWA got a little bit of a spike in popularity again, or in mainstream discussions. Why do you think NWA didn't want to stick around?
Well, wasn't it Carluzzo and then Howard Brody had it for a little while? I don't really know. I have to be honest. I'm not sure what happened there. I don't know if TNA also wanted to start going into its own branding. Not really sure. I mean, I'm not going to even sit here and lie to you. I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm kind of perplexed myself. I'm going to kind of go, let's see if...
Probably once that ended, then the belt kind of went into a decline. I know they tried to get the territories going again.
In October of 06, no, this is the history of the... Trying to find, like, the NWA. This is a TNA weekly paper.
I know Howard Brody and Carluzzo were running it for a while.
Yeah.
Carluzzo, you know what? Did pass away.
He did? Oh, I didn't know that. NWA, National Wrestling Alliance. All right. So let me go to... I'm trying to look a little bit here and see if we could find the official reasoning. We don't want to pretend or guess. So, under Bruce Tharp, here we go. October 10th, 2005. In August 2005, in June 2002, Jeff and Jerry Jarrett launched NWA Total Nonstop Action, a new promotion that aired a weekly two-hour pay-per-view series. Due to the terms of TNA's agreement with the NWA, and despite not actually being an NWA member, NWA TNA was given creative control over the world title and the world tag team titles. In 2004... having been rebranded as Total Nonstop Action Wrestling, TNA, the promotion launched a weekly television program, Impact, but continued to use the NWA titles until the relationship ended in 2007. So I really don't see, like, who was the one that kind of initiated the break. But in any event, in 2007, in May of 2007, the NWA broke off from TNA. TNA wanted to do its own thing, and they created their own belt. And the belt they made was pretty awesome looking, actually. Now, just like the 90s, we head back to the Dark Ages. So there was another tournament. It was called Reclaiming the Glory Tournament. And on September 1st, at a house show in Bayamon, Puerto Rico, Adam Pearce became the NWA champion. He defeated Brent Albright in the final. Now at this time, the NWA was starting to work with companies like Ring of
Honor.
I think
Daniel Bryan Bryan Danielson at the time was actually supposed to wrestle in that match, and Pierce took his place, I believe.
Yes, he did. Bryan Danielson defeated Pierce in the semis, but withdrew because of a detached retina. Danielson was actually the special referee for the Albright Pierce title match. So for the next few years, things bounced back and forth. Brent Albright would win it at Death Before Dishonor 6, which is, of course, a Ring of Honor show. Adam Pearce won it back in September. Blue Demon. Now, here it is. Ready for this? A 505-day reign for Blue Demon Jr.
Not even senior, junior. Okay.
Not senior. Blue Demon Jr. beat Adam Pearce on October 25th, 2008 at a house show in Mexico City. And he held the belt for 505 days until Adam Pearce won it back in March of 2010. Cole Cabana. Boom, boom, Cabana. Boom, boom, Cabana. Cole Cabana won the world title March of 2011 at NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. He beat Adam Pearce. He would lose to The Sheik in April of 11. I'm going to click on this. Is this like The Sheik, like Eddie Farhat? Oh, no, it's this young guy. He's The Sheik 2, or The Almighty Sheik. Okay, it's fine with me. Okay. He would vacate it because he wouldn't defend it against Pierce. Pierce would win it in a four-way match in July of 11. Colt Cabana won it back. Adam Pearce beat him back. So Adam Pearce had the world title. And, of course, Adam Pearce is currently a WWE producer. I think he's one of the ones that didn't get furloughed. He's a five-time NWA world champion, in case you didn't know.
Okay.
In case you didn't know. Adam Pearce left the NWA and resigned as champion after the organization refused to allow him to defend the title against Cabana. The match did take place. Then, in an elimination match, Cahagas. Is it Cahagas or Cahagas? I think it's Cahagas.
We'll go with Cahagas.
Cahagas won the title in November of 2012 at Wrath of Champions in Clayton, New Jersey.
Wow.
Not Clash of Champions, my friend. Wrath of Champions. No. Because that sounds more intimidating.
Sure. they had people waiting outside the door, you know.
Yeah, waiting outside the door to take a shit.
It's probably some high school gym.
Then, here you go. This is where things really get interesting. Rob Conway. Robert Conway from La Resistance. Won the world title, the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, on March 16th, 2013. Then he would lose it to Satoshi Kojima. Rob Conway won it back. Then Hiroshi Tenzan won it. Then Jax Dane won it. We know that name. Now we're starting to get in some familiar names. Jax Dane would win it in August of 2015. And then on October 21st, 2016, at a house show in Sherman, Texas, Jax Dane would lose the world title to Tim Storm. And now we're getting to some names. So during Tim Storm's title reign, Dr. G, is when things finally have come into place. Billy Corgan's company, Lightning One, purchased the NWA properties and gradually transformed it into a singular wrestling promotion. Nick Aldis would beat him at Cage of Death 19 in Sewell, New Jersey. He would hold it for 266 days. Of course, he would lose it to Cody at All In. And then as we recapped a couple of weeks ago here on the show, Nick Aldis would win it back at the NWA 70th anniversary show in October of 2018. And he still holds it to this day. So as you can see, for those that may not have really knew the holes in the lineage, the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship has had its ups, and it has most certainly had its downs.
It did, and I think right now, with Billy Corgan buying the NWA, now obviously nobody expect a pandemic to happen, so the momentum has kind of gotten killed a little bit, but hopefully one day we do get back to maybe a new normal or somewhat normal, whatever it's going to be at this point, that the NWA will have a place still in the wrestling world and make a difference. It's tough, but the wrestlers that are wrestling for the NWA right now, they don't have contracts like the WWE guys or AEW guys. They're not getting paid. Right. So hopefully for them, they can get back to performing and putting out the great shows that we love and enjoy as NWA fans. And that's why everybody's listening here, because they care about the NWA. It had the NWA World Heavyweight Championship had some, like you said, a lot of ups. I would say more ups than downs, but there was a little period of time where, honestly, like people said, what did Billy Corgan buy except for the trademarks of the name? What was it? But then he put a plan together. He has the right guy to be his champion in Nick Aldis. Awesome. I mean, I think the guy's good in the ring. I think he knows how to he does a good promo, and he makes you hate him, but he also makes you respect him, just like Ric Flair.
I agree.
And this weekend, this coming Sunday, he was slated to take on Marty Scurll at the 2020 Crockett Cup down in College Park, Georgia. And Sunday night, Dr. G, you and I were supposed to be, well, tomorrow we were supposed to be, if this is Saturday that you're listening, you and I were going to be on the road with the family, heading back to Connecticut from North Carolina. And then Sunday night, you and I were going to watch the Crockett Cup, and we were going to have a nice reaction pod right here on the Place to Be Wrestling Network. But alas, not happening. I hope everyone enjoyed this little history lesson. I was looking forward to chatting about the 10 pounds of gold. Dr. G, always a pleasure. You can find him on Twitter at P at KFC14360. He, of course, is also my co-host with one of my analysts with Andy Atherton and Mr. D'Amato on the Year in Pop over on the PTBM Pop feed. We just dropped 1981.
You just love to do that, don't you?
What? Pop? I trademarked that, by the way. When the Place Be Nation Pop feed started, I started doing that. The Place Be Nation Pop feed. And now Andy Atherton took it over in gusto. So thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter. Plenty of stuff coming up this week on the Place to Be Wrestling Network. We'll have a new episode of the Place to Be podcast, new episode of Place to Be Nation's main event. The next couple of weeks here on the NWA Saturday special, next week we're going to actually delve into a little history, another history lesson, this time with a promotion that not many people probably talk about, Doctor. And it's a lot of fun. And we may have a guest for the first time in NWA Saturday special history, but we are going to be talking about Houston Wrestling. Yes, the promotion led by, of course, Paul Bosch.
No, that's not Bruce Prichard.
No, it's not Bruce Pritchard. Yeah. No, Bruce Pritchard's not the guest.
Although he knows a lot about Houston wrestling, but unfortunately, I think he's a little busy these days.
You mean no box of gimmicks? No box of gimmicks? Can I buy a house? Can Steve? Can I get my man Pate to come on? My buddy Steve, Andy's and my pal Steve Pate works for Conrad. Anyway, so that's next week, and in 2 weeks, in honor of the Crockett Cup not happening, but bummer, we will review the 2019 Crockett Cup. Last year's Crockett Cup tournament, we will do a recap of, because it's up on the YouTube channel. Of course, it took place last April of 2019 down in Concord, North Carolina. And then after that, we'll probably delve into some other fun stuff pertaining to the GWCW year-long stretch project. So that's the next few weeks. Here on the NWA Saturday special. So next week's episode, we'll talk about a little Houston wrestling from the mid to late, from the early 80s. In 2 weeks, we will turn back the clock and revisit the 2019 Crockett Cup, which was the first world title match between Nick Aldis and Marty Scurll. So thanks for joining us. Hope you enjoyed the Place to Be Wrestling Network. We have a lot of great shows. And enjoy. I'm Scott. He's the doctor. And you're not.
Ciao.